Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, grass-fed beef raised on California's Central Coast. Now available online through Larder Meat Company. Learn more at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're jumping into a world filled with fizz, iridescence, and deliciousness. We're talking about bubbles.
It came from the air gas truck. Yeah, no, I never thought about it before that.
And I think it's emerged as a bulbous tea shops, a site of Asian American youth identity building.
We're called the invisible industry because these products you don't really see, but they're around us in every way, every day.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We're recording remotely, and it's Tuesday, April 6, 2021. So we're talking about something that's kind of like more of an industry backstory. Let's say it's called Flavor Intelligence. And let's introduce our guest. Let's start with Jean. Jean, what's your name and what's your business?
So my name is Jean Van Dem. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Esther.
Great. And Suzanne?
Hey, Suzanne Chalo here from Craft Beer Cellar, and now we can say Trinktish, which is a beer hall in Belmont, Mass. As well. Craft Beer Cellar is headquartered in Belmont, Mass. And I'm a beer geek.
We know that. It was so great to have you back on.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And Emily?
Hey, everyone. Fellow beer geek here. I own Rad Craft, and I'm calling in from Durango, Colorado today.
All right, Emily Hudo. Thanks for helping us organize the show. So, Emily, when you first proposed a show to me, I was a little baffled, and I've realized that this is a very important aspect of what happens in the industry, whether it's, you know, sales and breweries and data and everything. So I'm a neophyte, and you guys are going to teach me about this new project. So, Jean, tell us about Esther, what it is, and why we need this for our beer sales.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason I started Esther 3 years ago came basically from the observation that even in today's world where everything is about data and digital, there's still not a lot of information and a lot of insight and flavor. And all the data that we have about why people like what they like is very scattered and private. And it's like, you know, spread out over producers and retailers, distributors, and everybody has a couple of things, but nobody has a lot of data. And so I started Esther to become an independent source of flavor intelligence. And that allows us to provide insights to the entire industry, basically helping producers to make better products and retailers to sell more and more innovative products as well.
So a little backstory on you. So you're not from the beer industry. Tell us how you really got obsessed with this. I mean, you were a picky eater as a child, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You can ask my mom how I was when I was a kid. She always tells me that I was super picky and that I was always telling her that I would decide what kind of foods I would eat. And that's something that I took into my college education. So I studied food science at the University of Leuven in Belgium, where I'm from. And then afterwards decided to take a sidestep, did some consultancy and ended up working in grocery retail, working for Belgium's leading grocery chain, doing R&D and innovation there. And I saw how retailers are always focused on like creating a loyal customer and serving a customer and doing whatever a customer would need. And so when I met my wife, who's American, and I moved to New York, That's when I decided to really tackle this problem and bring together my scientific background with my experience in retail.
So let's just say you're in a supermarket and you're going to order a lot of different sauces. Let's use sauce as an example, or beer. What's the research or the intelligence that's going on when a large, you know, retailer is thinking about carrying a product or marketing it? What are you thinking about in those lines?
Right. So the big difference is between, you know, what purchasers and category managers at a retailer are thinking about today and what we think they should be thinking about much more. And if you look at the drivers today of these decisions, it's quite often about, you know, their gut feeling. It's about what they like. It's about what they think is a beer that is qualitative or a sauce that is qualitative for that matter. And then they also look at the financials, right? Does it make sense to carry this? Can I negotiate a good deal? Is this going to turn over enough? They also look at trends. They basically look at what sells. What we think is sometimes missing in that whole equation is to have flavor as an important element and an important data point. We know that consumers are looking for flavors, but it's very hard to search in a store on flavor. You can't look in the bottle. You can't taste everything. And so we wanted to make that information available both to retailers when they make those choices about their assortment, but also to producers when they're developing new products, and obviously to consumers when you're in front of the beer aisle and you're trying to decide what you're going to have tonight.
So is this something like a dryness scale in cider? Are you putting scales or on labels? How is this working?
Yeah, so the big advantage of using digital technology is that you don't have to use these generalized data points anymore. Yeah, we have an opportunity to really add a level of personalization here that hasn't been done before. And that means when I always give the example, you and I, we would taste the same beer in a very different way. And we use our own words. We are sensitive to certain things in the beer, and that might be very different, right? If we both drink an IPA, you might say it's incredibly bitter. I might say, meh, it's okay, right? And so these scales that we use and labels that we add are actually not easy for every individual consumer. And our technology allows us to basically personalize that for you. And we ask you questions about what you're sensitive to. And then we give you information based on what we know. And we give you labels that are basically made for you.
Wow. Let's jump to Suzanne. So Suzanne, just tell us a little bit about your background, because I really respect you as a beer expert and taster. And then why you're interested in Esther.
Thank you. Yeah, it's funny, when I was introduced to Jean from our mutual friend, Julia Hirst, formerly of the Brewers Association, I always trust people like Julia, and she reached out and she introduced Jean and his business partners. And I thought to myself, that's interesting, because we've spent, you know, the last decade plus studying beer and working really hard to hone in on exactly the things that she was sort of saying that they were doing. And I found it perplexing. I found it perplexing. And maybe I thought for a moment that it might be impossible, and not impossible, but like, to me, it seemed unreal that I had never heard of them. But they were in effect doing the same thing that we were doing, but doing it from a scientific or an academic side, not really necessarily in the industry right now. And so, yeah, we got on the phone, and it's funny, Jimmy, because I ask him some of the same questions you ask him. Like, what are you talking about? Please explain yourself. What do you mean, flavor and these things? And, you know, it turns out that, you know, Jean, as he explained, has a background in the same, you know, sort of industry. I mean, he sort of came from retail. He was looking at it in a certain way. He became very interested in flavor, not just a beer. I mean, we happen to be having a conversation around beer, but, you know, for wines and foods and things like that, you know, as a picky eater or whatever. And I think he actually, he took a chance, and I can appreciate that. You know, I am where I am, you know, 10 or 12 or 15 years in to studying beer and flavor because we were interested in it and we took a chance on it as well. We just, you know, we kind of scaled the other side of the roof, if you will. And I'm interested in what they're doing. And we decided to work with Esther because this is impressive and really, really the only thing we're missing when we look at our web technology. In fact, one of the first things I said to Jean was, but we're already doing this. And, you know, he challenged me in that. Yes, he could see that, you know, for example, if you look at the flagship store, the Belmont site, you can sort by brewery, but you can also sort by flavor, style, profile. And if you're pretty geeky, then you have some idea what a Belgian pale ale is going to taste like. And so you can go, maybe you peruse around in the Belgian beer section or in the styles, and you're able to come up with some things that are similar, you know, and I think a lot of people are doing that if we don't have a history with them. But I think Jean and his team were able to take it to a different level, and his proposition looked really great to me. Also, I don't know if you've seen a picture of Jean, but he's kind of got, you know, kind of, you know, sort of Einstein, he's got this Einstein look about him. And so I sort of pictured this, you know, Belgian Einstein flavor guy like popping up on our website. And really bringing what we're doing in person. And that's what we were able to really fly away on, is that he has an understanding of what we do in our stores, you know, across our footprint. This is exactly what our beer geeks are trying to do. Is have that conversation. Someone comes in and says, look, I want to buy a gift for my husband or wife. They only drink, you know, blank, blank, light macro beer. And we say, okay, no problem. And we go to the lager section and we say, definitely have to take this one. And they say, why? And then we say, well, both beers contain only 100% Pilsner malt, and Pilsner malt's going to have that really crackery, you know, flavor to it. It's not going to be overwhelming. It's not going to be bitter. It's not going to be super sweet. It runs right down the middle. And then we build up from there. It turns out that Jean and his team have perhaps been able to accomplish this on a digital or virtual level. And we look forward to, we're very close to being able to pop down Jean, the Einstein beer geek, I hope, on our on our website. He's laughing because he's like, oh boy, you know, this is getting crazy. Suzanne has all these images in her mind.
And we want you to keep sharing that. Let's take a step back and just say, okay, so in your journey through craft beer sellers, which we really respect, what are some like flavor education that you've been through? Like things like where you know which part of your tongue tastes certain elements, or, you know, Cicerone programs. What are things that have been trying to address flavor?
Yeah, definitely. BJCP, of course, is out there for those that are homebrewers and have run up the beer judge side of, you know, kind of beer academics, as we call them. It's not the direction that I went or my business partner, Kate, went in the beginning. Cicerone made a lot more sense to us. We actually had bumped into and met Ray Daniels. I don't even know. I don't want to date myself, but I think he administered the first exam in the Boston area, and he was looking for a location to do it. And we were still in the restaurant business. And we offered him some space to run that first exam in the Boston area. I don't think there were many people that showed up for it, because at the time, and that was, let's just say 2000 or 2000. It was later than that, actually. I think it was probably around 2008. People at the time were like, you know, what are you smoking? I mean, who studies beer? And why? you know, they were thinking more along the lines of, I study beer only when it's in my glass in front of me. And, you know, Ray, of course, we applaud him in his accomplishments to be able to actually successfully make a living at Beer Academics, which is great. And of course, you likely know Ray Daniels. He's got a long history of having worked with the Brewers Association, and he's a home brewer. He's written some books. He's been a longtime faculty member at the Siebel Institute. So there's no doubt on the spectrum of beer that Ray Daniels knows beer, and he knows flavor, and he knows all of these other things that made sense. And Ray actually will tell you the reason he started the Cicerone program is because he was tired of going in, you know, whatever bar or tavern or a restaurant in whatever city, because he traveled a lot, and getting less than acceptable beers served to him, whether it was because of the beer or whether it was because of the establishment. And then I think that opened up a whole other host of things, questions, and really took a microscope and put it down on the beer industry in terms of what was being made and what was out there in the market. And there were a host of us that sort of, you know, we applauded him early on in the early days, and we kind of bought into what he was doing, and we ran after it, you know, to try to get it. I've unsuccessfully attempted every level of his Cicerone program. I've taken the master exam twice. I can't even explain to you why I went back a second time.
It's a tribe unto itself, right? The ones who take it and keep taking it.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's jump back to Jean. So let's go to, you know, now we're here. It's 2021. You know, you're dealing with data, chemical, and sensory analysis. But how is that different from what Suzanne was talking about? And also, I'm a little confused. Like, you know, a lot of consumers want, let's talk specifics, a sweet beer. But do they want a fruity beer? And should I like Jolly Rancher as a flavor if I don't like Jolly Rancher? You know, tell us more, Jean.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very important, because if you look at flavor, we always have this thought that it's what happens on our tongue and in our nose. And actually, it's so much more than that. Flavor happens in your brain. It has to do with our emotions, with the mood that we're in, with our memories from when we were a kid, etc. And at the same time, what's important as well is that flavor is language, right? So this is why Cicerone programs are so helpful, because they create a common language to talk about flavor. And so the example you gave about sweet and fruity is a fantastic example, because actually we see a lot of non-geeky, non-connoisseur consumers that use those two terms, those two words, sweet and fruity, just, you know, interchangeably. And they don't really know what they're talking about when they use sweet or fruity. So what we try to do is, instead of trying to get everyone to speak the same language, is much more try to understand their individual vocabulary and their individual language. So when I have someone who tells me, hey, this beer is sweet and I love that, then our technology is going to take away, okay, they use the word sweet, but we're gonna connect that to what is actually in the beer. And we're going to see, like, well, is there sugar in the beer? Is there esters in the beer? Is there a certain sensory element in the beer that we can connect to the sweetness that that consumer is talking about? And what you'll find is that sometimes the words that a consumer uses are not words that would have been used in Cicerone programs, and are not words that you would find on the website in the product description, or that a store associate would use. That's basically the translation that we're trying to do. And then the personalization element is incredibly, incredibly key, right? Because the example about Jolly Rancher, I mean, I'm not judging anyone who likes Jolly Rancher. I'm also not judging anyone who likes Jolly Rancher beer, but it doesn't, like, liking one doesn't mean that you should like the other. And flavor is so much more complicated than that. It's not because you like one IPA that you're going to like every IPA. And a lot of consumers are not trained enough, not literate enough to basically say like, yeah, well, I like this IPA better than this one because there is a certain sensory element. I like the citrusy more than the hoppiness or the dryness or something like that. And so what we try to do is really just educate them, help them discover their own flavor, and then use those words, use their own vocabulary to guide them through, you know, the whole wide world of beer, right? Through all the beers in the assortment that you can find.
John, okay, so if you're like really working more with the industry side, how do you interact with breweries in terms of getting this knowledge to or from the consumers? I'm getting a little confused now. Do people sit down and fill out a survey? Are you what are you doing? What is this data? I'm a little lost.
Okay, so basically we have two products out there, and the first one is probably the most important one, is what we're working with Suzanne with, for example. And what we do is, instead of going direct to a consumer and asking a consumer, hey, what do you like about beer X or beer Y, we are going to integrate our technology into Suzanne's website, into the Craft Beer Cellar website. And so when a consumer goes to Craft Beer Cellar, they're going to be, you know, prompted by our system that is trying to ask them questions, or that will ask them questions and guide them throughout the assortment based on what they like, what they prefer. And then the next time that they come back, we're going to ask them like, hey, we noticed that you bought beer X or Y. What did you think? What do you remember from that experience? And those are the data points that Suzanne can use to kind of understand her consumer better, but that we also use to feed our database. On the producer side, we have a second product, which is our platform, right? Our data platform. Where producers can have their beer analyzed, and then we connect their beer to all the data that we have in our platform. And that's what we use to give them insights about, you know, their product. We give them insights about their portfolio, about the competition, and about the consumer that is drinking their product and what they're thinking about it.
Okay. So Suzanne, for you, so if I'm a consumer, I mean, I'm trying to just cover a broad introduction to this, but if I'm a consumer and I'm coming to your store, I'm looking for a sour beer, and that's, I say, I like sour beer. How do you interact with that consumer? But also, how will this Ester program help you do it better?
Yes. So if a customer says that to me, the first question I'm going to ask you is, do you mean sour or tart? And if they give me a funny look, because as John points out, I think actually in the United States, we've grown up pretty ignorant when it comes to taste and flavor of food, right? So it's just it's never been part of our society. At least when I was a kid and growing up, I think the beer industry has struggled over the last 20 years to get to a place where we really understand the difference between cracker and toasted bread, for example. So that's why that's a starting place for me. Are we talking Greek yogurt, sour cream, like lacto sourness, or are we talking acetic acid, more vinegar sourness, right? So I'm going to drill in on that. But I think the easy way for us to understand what John and his team will be able to offer us is, we're basically going to provide him with a little bit of data from what our customers have already purchased. And that's the one thing that we're not doing. We can link it in certain ways, but he then is going to drill into that data based on flavor. And he's going to be able to provide us with perhaps a different way to look at both the product that is in our stores, but also the path and pattern of potential path and pattern of craft beer consumers. So one time I come in, I drink a sour beer or a lacto-based beer, something that's more tart, that has some fruit in it, that's not over-the-top sour. And then I build up from there. Maybe I'm looking to explore things that are more lemony or really part on the Greek level side, and then maybe I'm going from there up to a lambic or something like that. It's nothing that we haven't been doing. It's just a different way for us to do it, which is why we're excited about it. We've really, quite frankly, at Craft Beer Cellar, we've been doing it very grassroots. It's been, kind of people in stores and the people and the owners and the staffs and all the stores very passionate about beer and, you know, really rolling up their sleeves to get their understanding so they can pass it along to both their staff and also to their consumers, you know, to the customers that shop locally at those stores. So we know for sure that from a flavor and taste perspective, that's data that exists that we haven't been linking. That's not data we currently link. And that is actually why Esther is very exciting to us, because the Esther team is offering us an opportunity, quite frankly, to link another subset of our data. We look at numbers, we look at styles, we look at geography. Boy, do we look at styles. We look at styles, and it's incredible to see what we can see. Numbers are amazing and brilliant. As you know, they tell no lies. Numbers tell the story. But this adds a subset to it that I'm really excited about. Because in my mind, I've already been there, but I have nothing to support it. It's all just dreams in my head. It's conversations with people along the way. And, you know, you can only hold so much of that in your head, right?
So you're Einstein and Jean is showing you how to write about it or something. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, one of the first things I said to him was like, what's this book? And he was like, yeah, you know, we wrote a book. And so, of course, the next thing I did was purchase the book because I was like, who are these people? I mean, how have I never heard of these people, right? And so, you know, again, I mean, I applaud the universe for bringing two entities, quite frankly, together that are doing the exact same thing. But we're roofing on different sides of the house, and we met in the peak up top. And, you know, thanks to Julia Hers, I guess. I mean, she's a dream weaver, and she brought us together. Hopefully, it ends up being a great relationship for Craft Beer Cellar, and you know, as we push forward, but also we hope to be able to provide for Jean and his team the experience component of, you know, what it looks like to get into retail. What does it look like for his secondary platform? I think it's maybe his primary platform, but I call it secondary because, you know, retailers think that they're the most important. But the brewery piece is important. Obviously, the producer side is critical. And I think that there's a lot more to drill down and learn. Sometimes, and one of the jokes in the retail side, by the way, is, you know, do breweries ever talk to retailers? Like, why would you do this? Or like, you know, one of the things about packaging sometimes, like the consummate UPC or SKU reproducers or reusers were like, why would you do that? Like, that's the craziest thing. You're making your retailer work so hard. And, you know, we could pick apart ingredients and, you know, we could hang our hats on certain beer styles. But generally speaking, one of the things that we wish happened a little more were more intuitive conversations between the retailer's opinion or perspective and what then gets sort of translated from the production house at a brewery. So, you know, we're not focused or studying that at all in terms of what Esther is doing, but I have a sneaking suspicion that what we'll end up finding is as they get in a little deeper with some breweries and some additional data points, is that they actually end up being able to help integrate some forms of data that they hadn't originally considered.
Wow. This is a great, we're off to a great start. We're going to take a short break and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. The Hearst family has raised cattle on California's Central Coast since 1865. Today, Hearst Ranch's signature product is their 100% grass-fed, completely hormone and antibiotic-free beef. The Hearst Ranches have always treated their animals with great care. Their cattle live a completely natural existence as foragers and grazers. Well-managed grazing fertilizes the land naturally, sustains a seasonal rhythm to the ranches, and produces a remarkable meat whose flavor is the authentic taste of the American West. Hearst Ranch beef is available seasonally, May through August, in select Whole Food markets throughout California, and all year round at their retail locations in San Simeon and Paso Robles. And now, HRN listeners in Arizona, Nevada, and California can get Hearst Ranch beef delivered right to their door through Larder Meat Company. Go to lardermeatco.com and shop the 100% grass-fed box to stock your freezer with Hearst Ranch beef. That's LARDER, meatco.com. Learn more about the storied history, farming practices, and conservation efforts of Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. So we're talking with Jean of Esther and Suzanne of Craft Beer Cellars with Emily Hutto from Rad Craft Beer. This is very cool, and you guys are schooling me a little bit, kind of on really how things work, customers, retail, products, all this stuff. But Jean, so going back to what is the North Star, the true North Star of the businesses that you know? What are businesses, retailers, breweries looking for that you're helping provide?
Yeah, the North Star is always about craft, right? It's about, for a brewer, it's crafting the perfect product. For a retailer, it's crafting the perfect assortment that will make and that will delight their customer, right? And I'm sure that Suzanne will tell me I'm right when I say what she wants is to make her customer happy. And we all want to get that perfect product to the consumer that will delight in it. And that's technically what Esther wants as well, is we see a lot of beer ending up in and a lot of food ending up at a consumer that is maybe not the perfect match for that product, right? Purely on flavor. They're not the ones that are going to experience it in to its fullest. And we think the North Star for all of these businesses is if you can create that link, if you can create that flavor mate, right, that soul mate in flavor, then you're going to be able to, to sell more beer, obviously, but also, you know, have a product out there that is truly differentiating, that is truly different. And on the retailer side, you know, what I learned in retail was that the way to go from a break-even retailer to a profitable retailer is to have a customer who's loyal to you, a customer who trusts you, a customer who keeps coming back and keeps coming back to spend their money at your business. And we think that our technology and our data is the way to reach those goals. And so our North Star is very much aligned with the North Star of these businesses in the industry.
So like, let's say 10 years ago in New York, I think it's one of the issues with craft beer and so many selections. It must be really hard. If I wasn't in the industry, I really wouldn't know what to buy. When I go to a bar or restaurant, if I'm in a new region, I don't know the names of the breweries. I feel like some breweries have flavor profiles that I trust. I often really don't know what to order. Like a good example was 8 or 9 years ago, Barrier was one of the new really great small breweries in New York City. And at my old pub, we always had a Barrier IPA on draft, and they had a certain flavor profile that I was just so addicted to, like that I was so loyal. But when that keg would run out and I would have to go to it, just even switching to a different brewery, it was like my palate would revolt. Is there anything you can tell me about that? Because it's kind of like buying candy or like, you know, you're buying your favorite sauce, right? It's like these consumer products, there's something that when you like something, you keep going back for it. But it is almost like an addiction, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when I talk about flavor being more than just what happens on your tongue. There's an emotional component to that. And obviously there's you know, the loyalty to a brand or to a product. I mean, what you have with that beer, I have with Duvel, right? A Belgian brand that I used to drink when I grew up, well, grew up when I was over 18, but when I was younger. And I still go towards a Duvel. If I can find it out here in New York as well, I'll still order one every time that I can. And if I look at why I ordered it and why I have such a hard time ordering something different, it has nothing to do with like the palate of, or with what happens on my tongue. It's an emotional thing. And so our thinking is that if you talk about flavor, you can't talk about flavor without including that emotional component, without including, you know, the importance of a pretty label, without taking into account price, without taking into account the context of where you're drinking and with whom you're drinking, right? I know people that have a super wide palate, but every time they are in a certain situation, let's say we're at the beach in the summer where you are on holiday, they always go back to that same brand of beer that fits that occasion. And so we try to understand those patterns, and there's no right or wrong there. That's really important to know. But the minute we start understanding those patterns, we're basically sitting on a treasure of information that is super helpful for brewers and retailers, but also for a consumer, right? Because understanding your own patterns and your own habits is useful for you as well.
Yeah, and also as a consumer, I feel like there's that great thrill, you know, when pubs and you know, indoor dinings open, there's a great thrill in trying different beers and different wines and things. But when you're actually been working, you know, in your day job, and you're out on a Friday night and you're waiting in a busy bar or restaurant, and you get that pint of beer or that glass of wine, if it's not really what you want, you're really disappointed. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Suzanne, how your take on that is, because sometimes I can be really disappointed if I go to a bar and they had a beer like in Massachusetts recently had the Lord Hobo 617. Thought it was a good go-to. I really enjoyed a good go-to IPA, and that bar ran out of it. And what they had was a totally different taste experience, and I didn't want it.
Yeah, I agree with what John has put forth for us. We're big on the emotional scale as well, and we kind of call it memories. I think, you know, Esther looks at it as a little bit more like, well, it's the same thing. I mean, I think we're a little bit more honed in on memories. It's emotional, regardless. Someone asked me recently why I liked Chimay Premier, and I said, and I think it goes back to the same things for Jean and Duvel, I said, it reminds me of Thanksgiving and my grandmother and this bread pudding she always used to make. And, you know, it's conjuring something up that you never forget. It's a pleasant memory or emotion. And I think as Jean said, you know, in life, I think we all look for those occurrences, you know, whether it's through food or beverage or company or, you know, places we visit or, you know, brands that we choose. You know, I always think of Sierra Nevada. There's not anybody that drinks beer or appreciates beer that doesn't see that color green and think, right, that, oh, that must be Sierra Nevada. You know, even if it's just a flash of the label in a cooler as someone's closing a cooler door, you know, as you're out floating on the river somewhere, you see that green. There is not another product in the market that has that sharp, bright Sierra Nevada green color. And it's just sort of the same thing. So I'm 100% on board with this part of what they're doing. You know, we've been sort of standing in the face of people that were looking at us crazy. As we were saying, you know, all of these things, right? You know, beer reminds us of memories. It has emotions. You know, it helps position us in place and time. I'm super glad to have someone. It's sort of a long lost brother. Jean is sort of saying the same things that we've been saying for years, using a slightly different mode or vehicle to get there.
So just new things. So you guys have a drink tish. Just tell us about that and how the food and drink go together, you know, flavors and food and drink pairing. I don't know.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for asking. You know, Kate and I came from the restaurant business. Most people that know us are already know that. We left the restaurant business because we needed to. We needed a break. And the only thing that made sense at the time, which was in 2010, was beer. That was the one common theme or thread. And so hence Craft Beer Cellar was born. And we were off pretty quickly and really never had a chance to look back. About a year and a half in, we decided to turn the model into a franchise model and opened our second store in July of 2013. And then, you know, our third store in October, our fourth store in November, and later in November, our fifth store, and so on and so forth. So it's just been growth, so much so that we went up over the apex and we're coming back down a little bit. I think in business and growth stories, you know, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to bring some people on your team that probably you shouldn't have, not because they're not nice people, certainly, but maybe they just don't have the same vision or believe in following the same, you know, sort of trajectory toward, you know, the beer industry or the growth model that you do. So we've done a little bit of trimming down over the last couple of years, but always in my and Kate's mind was to get back to the restaurant business. We've been sort of quietly planning what that looks like, I guess, over the last 2 or 3 years. This would have opened last year, but of course, things were delayed. And then that took us into the early part of 2020. And then the next thing you know, everything was shut down and everybody knows the rest of the story there. We decided to go ahead and open in late February. It's called Trinktish. That means absolutely nothing, but it is two words.
I love that name. I love it.
It's two words kind of pushed together, two German words. Drinking table is our rough translation. If you look at our website, you know, what was most important for us was to create a space that everyone felt welcome and it felt very sort of communal. And, you know, there was a sharing of life and conversation and food and all things good. So we decided to go ahead and open for takeaway business in late February, which was pretty interesting because, you know, then we have Kate trying to build a menu of things that will travel well and, you know, watching as, you know, she swims through a sea of takeaway or carry out containers and tries to make decisions about what's the right vehicle or vessel for the food to travel in. But it's been good. It's been 5 weeks. So far so good. She's been very receptive of, you know, constructive feedback. She's asked for it from customers. We've seen some changes in simple things like the cheese sauce for the pretzel. I mean, it's been really, really great. Guy comes in almost every single day now, which is pretty funny, and gets the Flemish stew, which is called chicken zui. Maybe Jean can school me on zui, but I've traveled to Belgium many, many times, and so much of what Trinktish is about is a culmination of our life experiences and food and beer and travel, quite frankly. So this for us was a takeaway from Belgium. It's made with actually a Belgian tripel, a local. Actually, I think she's bouncing between a couple of different triples in the stew. Cambridge Brewing Company's triple and Allagash tripel. Maybe Jean can school us on that in terms of flavor, but yeah, it's great. And people are blown away by it. This guy comes in every day for lunch now and gets a, you know, he gets a pint of it to take away and dares anybody to make fun of him for doing it.
Well, he obviously like knows his flavor, you know. Just tell us, since this is a beer show, is there one beer that you want to mention that's on at Trinktisch that's you recommend?
I mean, sure, I'd be happy to. There's a beer that I really, really love. By the way, I'm drinking a Zero Gravity Little Wolf right now. Shout out to Zero Gravity. They're amazing people. And their beer is phenomenal. Little Wolf turns out to be a gluten-free beer, but not necessarily on purpose. But I just love it because it's light and it's low in alcohol. And I love Mosaic hops. It's got some Citra hops as well. And this is actually on the menu at Trinktisch. And it really was put there because it's amazing, but also because it is gluten-free or reduced. And we wanted to have that option for people. I don't know if everyone has heard of a beer called Harvestun, Old Engine Oil. That is on the menu at Trinktisch, made in Scotland, but very much in the English or British style. It's a porter of the utmost perfection, lower in alcohol. I think it's actually 6%, maybe a little higher than most standard English porters, but it's light. It's got a bit of sweetness, but finishes dry. And Kate and I thought it would do well with the sausages and the potatoes on that menu, much like a German Dunkel lager or a Schwarzbier would do. It's been pretty well received, and most people haven't heard of it, so I think people are fairly curious. So what the hell is a beer called Old Engine Oil? But in my mind, in some ways, it's really one of the best English-style porters in the world. So if you haven't had it, you should seek it out.
No, I love that too. And I think you always think that it's either much stronger or darker than it actually is, don't you?
Absolutely. It's not. They're just so they're so inviting. And once you get into that glass, they're you know, everything that's great about a beer, in my opinion, always is a culmination of the sum of its parts. And when I look at a beer like that, it has the right amount of color. It's not too dark. It has the right amount of head. It's not too much or too little. It has some sweetness. The aroma is inviting, you know, that toasted bread crust, little bit of toffee. But it doesn't leave your palate feeling, you know, sweet. It kind of dries out on the finish, which I appreciate. It's sort of a trick, right? Trick of the brewer. If you finish the palate dry, then you know, the consumer is going to go back for another drink. And before you know it, they're, you know, into their second beer. And you've tricked them into drinking more than they maybe intended to.
Well, you've been studying your customers, Suzanne. So Jean, for you, some of the goals with Esther, will this make a better beer list for retailers?
The goal is that it makes two things, that it reaches two things. First of all, we hope that Esther drives an innovative beer list, and that it takes away the fear of a lot of retailers to put things on in their assortment that they wouldn't put in otherwise, just because they have the data now to support that decision. And then the second thing that we want to reach is that it's a beer list that is, or a beer assortment that is connected or that's aligned to what the consumer is looking for. And your customer at Craft Beer Cellar, like our goal is to give them an assortment that they will truly appreciate. And so that alignment is really important to us.
And then what have like breweries and you know, brewers guilds done wrong? And they're always trying to educate, you know, every wine person tries to figure out what dry wine is, and most people don't agree. So what are breweries doing wrong when they approach, you know, consumers?
I think nobody's doing anything wrong. I think it's just incredibly, incredibly difficult and complicated to get people to talk about flavor in the same way, in the same language. And so there's always a little bit of a disconnect between whatever you offer as insights and education and what a consumer is truly taking away from that and understanding from that. And then the second thing is that a lot of consumers are just not willing to put in the work, right? They don't want to take exams and they just want to find the beer or the wine that will connect to their preferences. And they don't even need to know why exactly that's the case. And so I think that the power of technology in this field is really that you can offer advice with the level of education that a consumer is willing to digest, is looking for. And if they don't want any, then we don't give any. We just give them the list of the beers that they're going to like. And if they want to be educated, they can still be educated either through the technology or through programs like Cicerone programs or like whatever the associations are offering, right? That's still valuable. I think this is a way to make it more accessible and to get more people involved and caring and conscious about their own flavor preference and why they like what they like.
Well, this has been great, guys. I want to just bring in Emily. Emily, thanks so much for bringing the show together. Can you just give us a quick outro of why you're working with Jean or how you started working with him?
You got it. Well, I love Suzanne's comment that Julia Hers is a dream weaver because she indeed is. And to that exact effect, Julia called and I trust her word and her palette so very much. And Esther resonated with me because I think as a beer journalist turned publicist, like I call myself, finding the diction that we use to define flavor and really capture its nuance is something that I've spent a career doing. And I think from the sales and marketing side of a brewery or a producer, for the sake of this conversation, we have so much sales data, but there's no calculation in those numbers explaining the why as to how people are experiencing these flavors and why they're returning. And so, again, to quote Suzanne, Esther really just takes things to this new level. And I was really attracted to Esther because I work with so many small breweries that either don't have the equipment or the staff or honestly, you know, even the knowledge to run a sensory lab themselves. And I think that we didn't get into it much today, but Esther has a sensory analysis service for craft breweries and producers that really levels this the playing field when it comes to accessibility for this kind of data. So I was just so attracted to this concept. And I think Jean's just this kick-ass human who is teaching me so much about not only flavor, but how to describe it and really find that common language. And finally, he's making this new level of data and flavor intelligence available to all. And I think that's a pretty special thing. So it was a story I was on board to tell, and I'm just so pumped to be here with you all. So thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much. And if anything from the show, Suzanne, I am going to start checking out Craft Beer Sellers on the website and more, and start honing my purchases based on what you guys are selling, because it's pretty awesome. I want to ask you a million more questions. I want to ask you, so should I have a cracker tasting Belgian pills tonight? What should I have?
Well, my question would be, what are you eating?
I actually have some artisan grain, like Kamut whole wheat Levain bread with just a little goat cheese.
Yeah, I would step it up a little bit. I'd go Belgian pale ale, you know, something that's got a little bit more of an esoteric or estery yeast strain. There's so much cool fruit in Belgian yeast. That really is enlivens the aromatics of the beer, and you know you get these easily digestible grains in the beer, but also high carbonation. You know, helps push away some of that dry, you know, character of the bread, and so on and so forth. Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. Sounds like we need to get back on one of these calls. It sounds like I could talk to Emily for hours as well. And I'm just laughing over here because it's all because Jean didn't like broccoli, right?
Yep. This is awesome. So we could talk more. And then next one, also the triple, you both, Duvel and Chimay, you're mentioning things. And I want to know really, you know, when you run it through Esther, what is it about the Duvel that makes you love it, Jean? And what is it about Chimay Premier that makes you love it, Suzanne? But maybe that's another show. So
I'd be happy to tell you, but I need more time for that.
Yeah. So we're just getting, thanks for taking the time with me. This was definitely is making me think more about what I'm tasting and the words I should be using, but also, you know, it's really confusing when not only you're a consumer or you're on the other side of the counter and someone asks for things. It's not the same. It used to be, I wanted a Stella and I'd be like, great, this is a Belgian Pils. I think that there's a lot of confusing different beers out there. And I think that this is really important because obviously if you're a craft beer consumer, I can see why people are drinking. My daughter's generation is going hard seltzer. And it's partly because it's easy. You know, there's, mm-hmm. there's, it's an orange or it's a cherry and it's seltzer. There's not a lot more to think about. So I enjoy the challenge and I love the complexity. So you guys have been really great and I hate leaving you out, but thanks so much to Armin, our engineer, and Caroline, our producing intern. Big thanks to Emily, Suzanne, and Jean, who have joined me here on Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.